Ata tërbojnë kur shohun se brenda në prapavijat e tyre një vend i vogël dhe një popull heroik lëfton me heroizm dhe me këmëngulje për të mbrojtur lirinë, pavarësinë e tij dhe ndërton me sukses socializmin.
Welcome to Fearful Symmetry.
Look, I can't put it off any longer. I've described the chants and rituals of the growing Hatchet Man cult. I've related the episode about the old freaky man who sees everything from his great tower. Now, I've got to give you a dose, or at least a microdose, of 20th century Albanian history. And while this brief account doesn't have singing snails or weird artists making love on kitchen tables, knowing something about Albanian history is pretty much the only way you can grasp the secret heart of the Hatchet Man show. Let's start at the end of World War II, after the fascist powers were defeated and Albania heroically emerged as the great socialist People's Republic of Albania. It was a communist government, a Stalinist government. The state had absolute control of the economy, and the strong-armed dictator had total control of the state. The dictator was Enver Hoxha, or as he liked to be called, Uncle Enver. And if you were an Uncle Enver fan, and hey, who doesn't love their uncle? He was terrific. He brought the country electricity, railways, industry, literacy, improved health care, and on and on. There's nobody like Uncle Enver. But his authoritarian state was so repressive, so tightly controlled and economically isolated, it proved a catastrophe. Hoxha eventually cut ties even with ideological bedmates like China and USSR because he condemned their brand of Marxist-Leninism as defective and impure. So Albania became a bit like today's North Korea, a bleak, impoverished nation more or less cut off from the rest of the world. And the more isolated Albania became, the poorer it became. As Hoxha drained the economy, installing hundreds of thousands of bunkers to thwart off imaginary invasions. His reign was infamous for its paranoia and brutality. He ordered party purges, mass arrests, executions. He created a huge network of forced labor camps and domestic spies. It was impossible to complain in Hoxha's Albania because there was always somebody who would report you to the authorities. Hoxha saw enemies everywhere. Anyone he considered a threat had to be removed. No one escaped scrutiny. Perhaps you were a military hero, or one of Hoxha's old beloved friends, or even the great leader's brother-in-law. No matter. Some transgression would be found, and you would be put to death. Meanwhile, everyone had to publicly declare their perfect happiness. "We're perfectly happy in this most perfect of nations." Songs of gratitude to Uncle Enver were legion. People lived in terror of the man. His image was everywhere. He saw everything. He knew everything. It was all his show. But if you wait long enough, things change. Uncle Enver finally kicked the bucket in 1985, and soon old-school totalitarian communism began to collapse all over the planet. By the early 1990s, the world was opening up. Everything was changing, and Albania was going to change with it. There were free elections, a democratic party. The new president, Sali Berisha, embraced liberal democracy. Hurrah! Democracy, capitalism, prosperity. This was giddy and glorious stuff for a nation mired in gloomy poverty for decades. Only, and I don't want to shock you here, dear listener, but capitalism occasionally has flaws. In fact, it can often resemble a certain kind of gangsterism. And in the nation of Albania, after moving from decades of a communist command economy to a market economy in a matter of months, well, such flaws soon became manifest. Albanian citizens were invited to invest in promising new enterprises, wonderful companies that would make everyone lots of money. You just needed to invest capital. The more, the better. And if you had to sell your homes or your livestock to do it, do it. Don't be a fool. The risk was small, very small. Indeed, what risk? Government officials promoted the investments. High returns on your money were promised right away. 30% in a month, even 100% in a month. It's the song of the West, the New World. What idiot would turn away from easy money? And soon, some two-thirds of the Albanian people found themselves investors with a bright future. After decades of communist dictatorship, they too would finally share in the great capitalistic dream. But, as you might have guessed, that dream was for suckers. The investments were colossal fraud, Ponzi schemes, pyramid schemes. Early investors paid off by new ones with only a very small group of people raking in any dough. These schemes were actually fronts for gun trafficking and money laundering, and a dawning realization emerged. A realization that all these companies were going to go bankrupt. And poof, millions of Albanians will lose everything. That glorious democratic government of Sali Berisha would soon be facing massive disaster. Protests had started, just with college kids, old pensioners, but the protests were spreading through the nation, and violent outbreaks were on the upswing. People were starting to demand their money back, or else. How long could this all be contained? Not long. President Berisha needed some time, some help, for he could see that their necks, his neck, would soon be in the noose. Albania itself would soon be on the brink. And so, President Berisha called on the Americans. Or more precisely, the CIA. They might not have been Berisha's good buddies, but they had a working relationship. Truth is, American spooks were in Albania since 1947 with their Cold War machinations. And by the 1990s, those operations were fixed upon one looming threat, Islamic terrorism. It turns out that Al-Qaeda and jihadi groups from Egypt really liked hiding in Albania. Albania was close to Europe, its officials could be bought, and the Islamic charitable organizations there could be cleverly exploited. What's not to like? So in the 90s, the CIA began working with Albanian intelligence to snag these terrorists off the streets of Tirana or of Elbasan and secretly render them out of the country and back to Egypt, where they might be more productively questioned, that is to say, viciously beaten, whipped, sodomized, electroshocked, or any other torture in vogue at the time. Now, the Americans felt that these covert operations were proceeding quite nicely and preferred that they weren't muddied up by some Albanian civil war or a regime change. So if the democratic Albanian president was desperately struggling with social upheaval, the CIA would send help. And they did. They sent him the architect. And Albania never knew what hit them. The architect was a shadowy figure known for crafting unconventional solutions to thorny problems. A master of psyops with a penchant for deep social adjustments, the architect designed high-impact propaganda projects that had a way of spinning the ball in a different direction. Now, to imagine a spy like the architect, forget about James Bond. Conjure something closer to John le Carré's polite, self-effacing George Smiley. For there was no cloak, no dagger, indeed no allure at all to the architect. There was only a strong, musty whiff of dreadful normality. The architect was a plump middle-aged woman of Polish descent, in sensible shoes and a sturdy coat, bland and forgettable to anyone who happened to meet her casually. Even the most exuberant of household pets regarded her with a certain listlessness. Her fortress of banality was part of her immense talent, for behind that fortress lay a most wily and twisted mind who found nothing more amusing than altering and confounding entire societies. And Albania needed serious alteration. Companies were going bottoms up and people were losing their life savings. There were demonstrations in Durrës, scattered shootings in Pogradec, and just down the block in Tirana, three drunk and distraught men set fire to an old house, mistaking it for the president's quarters. Berisha was desperate. He ordered soldiers to surround his home in the hope of discouraging any hotheads with dreams of assassination, but he knew it was just a matter of time. And so it was that Berisha and the architect met one evening at the president's private residence. I learned all the surreal details of this meeting from a certain source who I cannot name, but you can probably figure it out eventually. Berisha was a rabid chain smoker, despite having been a cardiologist before he found politics. He had a habit of wearing a stethoscope around his neck and, without prompting, pulling it out to check associates for heart irregularities. This was probably far less endearing than he imagined. In any case, there he was, moments after the architect arrived, pressing his stethoscope on her chest and threw rapid puffs on a cigarette, explaining the dangers of fluid in the lungs. President Berisha was an educated man, but rather unsophisticated. He had never visited the West and wanted outsiders to see him as worldly, as hip, as one of them. So when he presented the architect with a ceremonial gift, a wooden Albanian music box with traditional inlay, he was excited to show how his technicians had rejiggered the mechanism to play Fleetwood Mac's Don't Stop Thinking About Tomorrow. He had once seen footage of Bill Clinton's election night celebration and assumed this song would be a festive treat for any visiting American. But when the architect thanked him in an overly courteous way, he could see it did not have the intended effect. Then Berisha led her to a huge air hockey table, curiously situated in his bedroom, just a few feet away from the bed itself. A woman, presumably his wife, was sleeping there at the time, softly snoring. Berisha turned on an overhead lamp and looked at the table adoringly. He was devoted to air hockey. He told her that he once traveled to Istanbul to learn the game from Estonian master Leopold Komarov. This table, he assured the architect, was imported at great difficulty and is the only one of its kind in all of Albania. The air pressure is perfectly calibrated, and the puck's made of only the finest polycarbonate resin. He tried to coax her into a game, just perhaps a short one, but the architect politely demurred. Berisha was frustrated. He thought, nothing impresses these people. So he just said to her simply, okay, we drink. He led her into his study. It was furnished in the Albanian manner, dark and comfortable, with traditional rugs, tapestries, decorative snowshoes, and a series of severed goat heads atop what seemed to be old hat racks. Three boys in traditional Moles skirts brought in glasses of the anise-flavored liqueur Raki. They would be making innumerable visits that night. And the president and the architect finally sat down to plot how Albania might avoid total devastation. It was now becoming apparent that Berisha had been drinking heavily for quite some time. He quickly became distraught when discussing his nation's financial plight. Disaster is disaster. He fumed endlessly about his enemies. Let Nano rot prison, the pig fuck. Punctuated only by tender and inexplicable expressions of care for American pop star Britney Spears, who he felt no one truly understand. And then Berisha started to quietly weep. The architect said nothing through all of this. She was an exceedingly patient person and quite content to pour herself yet another glass of raki and snack on the lightly seared lamb testicles. At one point, Barisha stood up. There were tears in his eyes. He thrust out his right arm, struck his heart repeatedly with his fist, and began to perform a work of the 19th century father of Albanian poetry, Naim Frasheri, words that all Albanians knew from their mother's milk.
O mountains of Albania, and you, O trees so lofty, broad plains with all your flowers, day and night, I contemplate you, your highlands so exquisite, your streams and rivers sparkling.
It went on like this for a while. Meanwhile, the architect was lost in her own thoughts. She had been gazing up at the large oil painting on the wall opposite her. It depicted a quaint pastoral scene set in the Albanian countryside. There was a handsome, long-haired, almost beatific shepherd in traditional garb holding a wooden staff and surrounded by a band of extremely large groundhogs grazing upon the green grass. Well, no, not exactly grazing. Looking more closely, she noticed that some of the creatures had gaping maws and teeth bared and seemed to be eyeing the good shepherd anxiously. When the president finished his poem, the architect told him that it was splendid and quite moving, and she then informed him that if he was ready, she had devised a plan to save him and the nation. She told him, "There will be a show, a TV show, an extraordinary TV series featuring a very, very bad man. The man will be villainous, truly evil, odious and unrepentant, and this is very important, he will be masked. The bad man will wear a mask. This television show will cause a sensation. The good people of Albania will watch the show and hate this man, despise this man. They will demand justice, demand that the show be removed. Demand that the show be destroyed. But it will not be destroyed. Only at a certain point. Not too soon. Not too soon. But when the people are at fever pitch, the evil man will be unmasked. And just at the right moment, we will reveal the identity of this crazed, despised, hated killer. Everyone will finally see his face." And here she whispered, "And it will be the face of Slobodan Milosevic." Well, the architect was pleased with herself. She downed the rest of her glass in a gulp and reached for a refill. Now, for those who don't know, Slobodan Milosevic, he was the president of Serbia at this time. Historically, Albanians hated the Serbs. And Milosevic, he was a killer. He was responsible for the infamous massacre of civilians at Srebrenica in Bosnia just a year earlier. He would eventually be prosecuted and convicted for war crimes in The Hague. But President Berisha was not enamored by this proposal. He had been leaning forward, listening intensely, smoking like a fiend, and he could not contain his exasperation.
"Mask! Unmask! The fuck this idea! You want TV show? This horse shit. You give me horse shit. I am do nothing."
The architect calmly continued. "Oh, on the contrary, Mr. President. On the very evening of the televised unmasking, you will speak to the country. You will inform them as a good father needs to inform his children of the shocking news. You have uncovered a plot most sinister. You have discovered that agents of Slobodan Milosevic have infiltrated and ransacked good, decent Albanian companies. They have stolen the money of the good, decent Albanian people. They conspire to sow dissent and destroy our great nation. But you will not not allow this to happen. And then, Mr. President, you round up the usual suspects, put them in chains, televised trials, public executions, yada, yada, yada. Yes, the people will have lost money. The world is not perfect. But they will have gained a great nation. They will understand the need to unify under you and your party, to preserve independent Albania for their children and grandchildren. You, Mr. President, will be the great Albanian hero. The president of Albania felt an immense headache coming on. He had no illusions of ever being some great hero. He now felt convinced that things would continue to get worse and worse, and there was nothing to be done. He rose and stumbled toward the door. The image of his beautiful air hockey table came to his mind. He felt the desire to touch its smooth, laminated surface, to be part of a world higher and more refined than this one. And as he left the room, he said over his shoulder to the architect,
"All right, go. Go make TV show."
And in this way, Hatchet Man was truly born.
You've been listening to part 4 of Hatchet Man, a production of Fearful Symmetry, written, performed, and produced by Bob Paris. Music and sound art from Voyagers, The Shed, John Bartman, TRG Banks, MFP, Kevin McLeod, Keith Jars, and KSO Art. For more information, please go to fearfulsymmetry.org